I have a magnificent library. Well, I say that. I can't help but keep buying books. I'm in love with the idea that it is a worthy and important thing to accumulate a large collection. But it's one thing to acquire the effects, and it's another thing to push through and actually read them. This is a show about collecting and about trying to learn more. Also, it has a mascot.
Good day to you. I am Benjamin Stillingfleet, adventure botanist, academe, conversationalist, artist, and mascot of tonight's show. Come now, and let me transport you to a time long ago, in a strange, far-flung land completely different from all that we know.
In February last year, I was on tour, staying in the attic room of a B&B in Leicester.
You lead a very glamorous life.
Exactly. This is my friend Maeve, by the
way. Hello.
Anyway, I was in my B&B and I found myself watching East Midlands Today, which is, in my opinion, not only the best regional news reporting in the East Midlands, but probably in the whole of the Midlands. And this is why. They had a feature where for every single day of the leap year, a reporter was going to visit a new and exciting person or place in the East Midlands. The day I saw it, the reporter was going to visit a man who had set up his own museum dedicated to the history of farming and agriculture. He led the reporter out to his allotment, and from under a sheet of tarpaulin revealed the hybrid monstrosity of fish tanks that made up his approximation of an exhibit, made entirely from things that he'd found. It was mostly old toys stuck together, like a He-Man with a rake, or a Barbie with its hair cut short, wearing dungarees and tending to a flock of hideous mutant hens. The best way I can describe it was as if Hieronymus Bosch had designed the Guardian wall charts. By the way, that is the most highbrow joke I have ever written and will ever write. I put it in because I've only recently found out about the works of Hieronymus Bosch. I thought at 26 there were no more surprises left, and then bang! This is a man living in 15th century Holland who painted things you simply should not have been able to get away with. Like a painting of heaven depicting a naked man bent right over with a flower protruding from his bum, and not one person put him to death or anything. In 15th century Holland, you should have been put to death for just thinking about that. Like if you'd casually mentioned to a friend in church, Maeve, can you be here on Miss Bosch, please?
Okay.
Hey, I was thinking of doing a painting of heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. They probably won't put you to death for that.
Ah, great, because what I was thinking of putting in it was a fish's head, with a woman's groin sort of jutting out of it, then a pig dressed as a nun, French kissing an old man, and then just six ladies' bums in the face of a lobster.
Don't do that. They will bloody do you in.
If you can transpose that strangeness onto some old trestle tables, you'll come close to a picture of this man's homemade museum. And I felt very torn watching it, because I really like eccentric people, and I really like homemade things, but this was really weird! And the reporter was obviously a bit conflicted as he tried to interview him.
So, this is your exhibition. Do you get many visitors?
Oh, no. You're the first one.
And how long have you had it here?
15 years.
But you've got grandchildren. They must love coming to see it.
If anything, they're terrified.
By this point, the reporter was really clutching at straws.
So, you've had this museum for 15 years and nobody comes and nobody likes it. Why do you keep it going?
Because it's important. People should want to know about it, and eventually someone will care.
Since then, I've been reading about the Enlightenment and getting sadder and sadder that I've missed the boat by about 300 years. I've realised pretty much all I want to be is an 18th century gentleman.
That's not going to happen.
Why?
Ovaries? Time machine?
I have both of those things. I can't help myself. I love everything about these people. The fashionable people of the 18th century wanted to mimic the French in everything they did. And I have such a country crush on the French. They eat like kings and they have philosopher celebrities. I concede I may not even have to become a gentleman, although I will keep my fine moustache as I believe it makes me look more French. I could be like Elizabeth Montague, who set up the Blue Stocking Circle, chat parties that validated creative, intellectual women.
Ladies, I, Benjamin Stillingfleet, mascot of this episode, was too a member of the Blue Stocking Circle. In fact, the term Blue Stocking was actually coined after my very own famous
Stop
blue...
Stop butting in, Stillingfleet. I am trying to improve myself. And the Enlightenment gives me hope. It was, without a doubt, the most exciting explosion of enthusiasm for acquiring information ever. And at the centre of it, for me, is John Locke. He was the philosopher who said,
"When we are born, our minds are a blank sheet of paper."
That thought changed everything. Before then, everything is predetermined by God. If you didn't know something, it was the unknowable mysteries of God, so tough luck. But once your mind is a blank sheet of paper, it matters what you put onto it. Ironic then that John Locke was the first person to win the big money on Deal or No Deal.
I'm stunned. How did he even know what box it was in? What box was it in?
It was innate. But his whole thing was that he didn't believe in innate knowledge, so he took the money, but he just felt sick. And he had to be all like...
Thanks, Noel. Brilliant.
But he was devastated. And his wife was so excited.
Oh, John, this is wonderful. 250 grand, which is a lot more money in the 18th century. We can get that jacuzzi like you've always wanted.
Could you just be quiet for a minute?
What is it, John?
It's just that was my big stick. I don't believe in innate knowledge. But then I saw box number 8 and it was like, boom! I'd always known it would be there. Everyone's going to think I'm a right douche.
The Enlightenment was when people learnt how to acquire and then use actual facts in a rigorous manner. It was the start of modern empirical science. And oh my word, does that appeal to me at the moment. I'm crushed by how easy it can be to coast through life as an adult, barely, if at all, informed about the world around us. It's as if at 21 you're allowed to say, that is it for me and learning anything in any genuine depth. I'm busy. I've just been handed 2 free newspapers, so I've got to find out who's got fat and who's got an old-looking hand. I'm busy. Political conversations that last for hours when nobody has a clue. I don't like him. I don't like his policies.
What policies?
He's only got one eye.
That is not a policy. Name one policy.
Okay, fine. I don't like his policy of having one eye. I just find myself despairing, asking, where is the rigour? Where is the rigour? Which is also a question I find myself asking when sailing. And it's not that hard to start living your life in a more rigorous manner. My new favourite thing is drinking from a Pyrex measuring jug. It's more scientific. And then I leave the room and come back in, pretending to be a doctor examining my progress. I see the patient has drunk 200 millilitres of Sprite Zero this morning. That's about normal for this time, but I'll be keeping an eye on that. I have problems, though, because I am more interested in people than things. It feels like the old arts versus sciences riff all over again. I was on the pretentious, artistic, self-harming team. I couldn't be on their measuring things in glass jars team. Those guys were losers and probably like virgins or whatever. But John Locke would say...
That's ridiculous. You have to aspire to become a polymath. Plus, I totally get mine.
John, come back in the water. It's getting all soapy.
The aim was to try and know as much as possible and make connections between disciplines. Also to get a bitch in jacuzzi. But I don't get what happened logic-wise from let us categorise and understand abundant nature. I wonder how many types of butterfly there are. To let's take one of each thing, kill that thing and pin it onto a board. The presence of a cabinet can justify almost anything.
My God, what is that?
That's a pile of sparrows' corpses.
Oh, that's awful. What's that?
It's the ornithology exhibit.
Oh, that is simply charming. Look at that little bird there.
And by that same logic, I would like to say that Dr. Gunther von Hagen, if he were stripped of his bodywork exhibition, would be revealed for what he actually is, which is a demon with ready access to plasticine. Oh, look at me. I've put a dead pregnant lady on a horse. Aren't I clever? No, you are not clever. You're a classic textbook villain. The only way you could make it clearer would be if you said, I collect the bodies so that I can eat the souls.
I don't think you're being fair. I like that exhibition.
Well, shame on you, Maeve. Don't encourage this monster touting his corpse parade about the town. I'm not a stranger to collecting myself, just not human corpses. When I was young, I had a frog collection, and it didn't matter to me that individually they were tacky and worthless, or that as a group they were tacky and worthless. It just mattered that they were frogs, that I was getting them, and that soon I would have a lot more of them. The best collection that I know about is the Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford. It's a glorious collection of anthropological objects. Objects from people. It's pretty much the biggest stash of things that one man stole off of the world. Along the lines of...
So you say this is sacred to you, Marcus. Put it in the bag. Good day!
As I did more research, I found out General Pitt Rivers didn't even steal the stuff himself. He was just a rich, bored young man who went to auctions and outbid people, who probably desperately wanted the things and could only afford one of them, and he probably did it at the last minute when they'd taken their eye off the ball just because they had to go and do a gig.
You're protecting your own feelings about eBay, aren't you?
I really wanted that bike, Maeve.
I know, love.
They use robots to cheat.
It's not why the good Lord gave us robots. So I was really disappointed to find out that Pitt Rivers got all of his things at auction. But he still managed to amass this collection of 20,000 objects, which has grown now to 300,000. And every one has its own handwritten label with a taxonomy so detailed and so fastidious that it's often at odds with the nature of the thing being labelled. For example,
FC1/1924.13.AB5. This box was given to us by a woman of the village. She said, "Be careful, there's a witch in it."
I wish I could fully convey to you how wonderful the museum is. It's made up of glass cabinets in a darkened room. And although each one has its own theme, from cabinet to cabinet, no logic at all. So you'll be looking at medical implements, then gambling games, then shrunken heads, and your brain will hurt. But because the objects are from people, each one of them seems to be suggestive of 100 little romantic human vignettes. And in one way, you feel totally outnumbered by the amount of subjects you are yet to find out about. But in other ways, it does exactly the opposite. One cabinet in the Pitt Rivers Museum is full of just spoons. Spoons from the entire history of human existence. 5th century Chinese spoons, fancy 18th century French spoons, the kind I like, miscellaneous spoons. And you stare at them for a little while and you think, yeah. People bloody love spoons. Everyone does. Yes, you bloody do. You do. You have a soup. What do you use? You use a bloody spoon like the rest of us. Looking again at my frog collection, they are pretty pointless. But writing this, what I didn't expect was that every single one of them is connected to a story about my parents, my childhood, things which are long gone and can't come back. These are the things that I would put into a museum. These are the most precious collections that I have. And I know I'm close to landing too far on the romantic, pretentious, self-harming side. So all I can say in my defence is I am trying to be like the 18th century ideal of the virtuoso.
A person with scientific and artistic interests who might collect antiquities or natural curiosities for private interest or public discussion.
Trying to take on everything is definitely the right kind of attitude. It makes you better to know more. It makes you better to try. It's like my mum always says, I'd rather be a crowded cupboard than a plastic-loving corpse snatcher. No offence, none taken.
It's the last time you fools mocked me.
Dr. Gunther von Hagen!
Yes, the very same. You're going to regret the day you angered me. I'm going to play the horn I made from human bones. Arise, my corpse army. Arise and destroy them. Destroy them all.
Oh, no!
Come on, stop right there! I think you've forgotten about my famous blue sword!
Oh! I die. I become my own exhibit.
Blue sword?
Yes, my famous blue sword for killing demons. I was gifted it by foresters in the Indies after I categorised their grasses. The Blue Stocking Circle was named after it.
The Blue Stocking Circle was named after a blue sword. That is just weird.
Well, it's like I actually said in print. What appears to be mere curiosity in one age may be useful in the next. Eventually, someone will care.
I'm not saying that Benjamin Stillingfleet has stayed alive all of this time and opened his own horrifying museum in the East Midlands. I'm just saying it's interesting that the two of them have never been spotted together.
All of the Planet's Wonders, shown in detail, was written by and starred Josie Long, with Maeve Higgins, Daniel Harkin and Henning Venn. It was produced by Colin Anderson.